I'm going to introduce myself in Tlingit and then I'll translate after. Wasa iati anyat kusani Tlingit kena Guchi shukhatuasak Kleka kena William Dalton Sr. yukhatuasak Yeh nakachati Kiksari ayakat Dakdain tanyatki ayakat Wajaneri dachkan Huna kau Knakchi shakhe isiak. How are you doing, noble people? My Tlingit name is Gooch Ish, which means father of the wolf. My English name, you guys got that part, William Dalton Sr. I am of the raven moiety. We have two different moieties. One's a raven, the other one's eagle. I am of the raven moiety. I am of the Kiksari clan, which is who my mother is, the raven frog out of cake. I'm the child of the Dakdain Tan, which is who my father is, the raven seagull here in Huna. I'm the grandchild of the Wedzeniti, which is, I believe, the eagle brown bear out of cake, which is who my grandparents are, on my mom's side. I live here in Huna, and I thank you all for listening. The recruiter came over to Huna and asked me if I wanted to join, and I said yes. I believe it was Staff Sergeant Roger Morrison, who was our recruiter, was the recruiter at the time, and asked me if I wanted to join, and I said yeah. I had really long hair, kind of down to my chin. When I first joined, I got sent over to Juneau before I went down to basic training. And at that first drill, they took me to the barbershop and chopped off all that hair. I didn't have any uniform, so then I just kind of sat back and watched everybody else do all the work while I sat back and watched, and kind of got some tips from other soldiers that were in the service on what basic training is going to be like, and went down like a few months later for basic training. Basic training was in Fort Jackson, South Carolina. It was strenuous. Drill sergeants in their face 90% of the time. The other 10% is probably while we're sleeping or eating. And even then they were in your face telling you to eat and give you 5 minutes to eat, and all you get is two to scarf down all that food. In my particular basic training, when I went down in August, and it was supposed to be 9 weeks of training, but they fast-tracked it to 7 weeks so we can get it done before Christmas and New Year's break. And after that, I was able to come back home to Huna for Christmas and New Year's break and went down to Aberdeen Proving Grounds, Maryland for my advanced training, which is the 63 Bravo mechanic, wheeled vehicle mechanic. Can't say that I remember them, but I remember them being there and telling me how to fix a Humvee or a deuce and a half. Basically anything with rubber wheels we fix, excluding the tanks and anything with traps. When I first got down to Maryland, I got down there the day after New Year's, and I had to sit there and wait for 42 other people to show up for the class. So I was down there for a month before the class even started. There was a lot of cleaning and a lot of downtime before the class actually started. And the class didn't start until February, and I didn't get done until April. Came home for 3 months, April, May, June, July. July, we got deployed. Went down to Camp Shelby, Mississippi for pre-deployment training. Did 3 months there before I went over to Iraq for a year. And Iraq was pretty hot. And I gotta say, Camp Shelby was pretty hot too. I can understand why they sent us there. 100 degrees with about a 90 to 100% humidity. Growing up here in Huna, if you can't shoot a weapon, you don't get to bring home food. After being in the military, if you can't shoot a weapon, an enemy will probably get you before you can get that. So yeah, I'd say that growing up in Huna has helped. I think I was they call it a Hawkeye when you're shooting targets for qualifying. Remember shooting, they give you 40 targets to shoot downrange, and I've hit all 40. My father, George Dalton Jr., always take me out hunting, and my family likes eating seal meat. So when we go out on the boat, we look for seal while we're fishing. We see a seal. The seal's got a very small head, and it's usually in the water, and that's all you can shoot is the head. You can't get a body shot or anything. And if you miss, you don't get to bring home food. That's probably one of the reasons why I was such a good shooter in the Army. It was really hot over there. Some of our patrols were mostly border patrols. We'd drive from Camp Bering, Kuwait, to the border of Iraq and Kuwait, and there they'd have towers for us to sit in, do 12-hour shifts of tower duty. While we're there, we're doing border patrols around the border, and there'd be a convoys of the US bringing stuff out of Iraq, all the US supplies, the Humvees and everything that was probably blown up in Iraq, bringing it back to get it salvaged. We'd have to check all those vehicles that can go into Iraq and come out of Iraq into Kuwait. So we do a lot of border security and checking vehicles. With all the sand, lots of sand and a lot of sunshine. The weather over there is really hot. The winters over there are about 90 degrees, 80 degrees in the wintertime. That's our summertime here is about 90 degrees. But when it rains over there, it comes down in buckets or 55-gallon drums, you probably say. Rain hard and won't last very long, but it does rain over there. And the hottest temperature over there was thermometer that read 140 degrees, and it went beyond that. So you're wearing your full battle rattle, 50 pounds of gear on your back, plus your Kevlar and your weapon and everything, wearing all that in that temperature. Needless to say, there was tall pallets of bottled of water everywhere. Everywhere you look, there's a pallet of water. If you ever got thirsty, just go over and grab one. You don't have to ask. They want you to stay hydrated over there. And that's how it was in Mississippi, too, and went to train there. And pallets of water everywhere. Never go thirsty. When we're at the border, when we get Iraqis, met a few of them that were kind of translators that wouldn't come to the border, not a part of our convoy or anything. And I think it only happened once. An Iraqi walked up to the border asking for help, claiming that his vehicle is broke down and he wants us to stop what we're doing and go and get his vehicle back online. Needless to say, we didn't help him out. He's probably trying to lure us out to put a bullet in us, maybe, I don't know. So just ended up sending him back to his vehicle, figure it out on his own. In the 6 years that I was in, went over to Iraq for a year, October of 06 to October of 07. Came back here to Hoonah for a couple of years, did weekend drills over in Juneau. And I believe September of 2010 or 2009, went over to Mongolia for a month and did some multinational peacekeeping training with four other countries. There's us, Mongolia, Thailand, Nepal, and India. There's five countries pulling together to teach each other different techniques on how to handle a particular situation, because everybody handles the situation differently, and gave each other pointers on how to try to bring peace back to the world, which is a very tough battle, ongoing battle, no matter where you are. I was there for 3 weeks before I came back home. Iraq, I was in Camp Mbiring. We're not actually in Iraq. We're right at the border of Iraq and Kuwait, stationed in Camp Mbiring, Kuwait. I got a picture over there, a picture of my foot on the other side of the border, though. I was in Iraq. You're going to give me credit for that. No racism. Everybody sees a person for who they are. On that deployment over to Iraq, though, I've got to mention that I think we made a little bit of history going over there. I think there was over 500 Alaskan soldiers that went over to Iraq. That was the largest deployment for Alaska since one of the World Wars, I believe. From what I was told, that made a little bit of history going over there, being the largest deployed National Guardsman from Alaska going to Iraq. And the part I never understood was they send a bunch of Alaskans to a desert. How did I stay in touch with my family? Technology. Got over there, they have mobile phones, or you go to a payphone and use a card with minutes on there. Use the card to call home. And when you're calling back home, you got to think of the time. Being over in Iraq, you're 12 hours ahead of my family here in Alaska. So when it's midnight over there, it's noon here in Alaska. So you got to look at the time and kind of calculate what time it is here to find out if you're not going to wake them up. Because if it's 6 o'clock p.m. or 1800 hours over there, it's 600 hours here. So 6 in the morning. My family don't like to wake up that early to talk. But I'm sure they'd answer if they saw it. In Camp Beer in Kuwait, they had celebrities come over. They had concerts. One of the celebrities that I remember is Carrie Underwood. She's a country singer. She came over and did a concert for us, and I was able to, the concert was during my downtime, in between shifts. So I was able to go watch that concert. Had a UFC fighter. I got to drive there every UFC fighter, Tito Ortiz, and he had one of his friends, Justin McCulley. Both of them came over to entertain us, and can't say that I saw them fighting or doing any matches. They just came over to show their support and give autographs and take pictures. And another one was Gary Sinise. He played Lieutenant Dan in Forrest Gump. There's only a few that I remember while I was over there. Other things were, they have a gym over there with weights. So on my downtime, when I don't have to go do patrols, I go over to the gym and do some weightlifting. Try to stay fit. My R&R leave, where I got 2 weeks to go anywhere in the world that I wanted to, I came home. And during my R&R leave, my R&R was leave was in March. That was March of 2007, and that was the year that we had a record snowfall here in Hoonah. Here in Hoonah, they hit 300 inches of snow, which I believe is like 26 feet of snow. It's not all in 1 month, but 26 feet of snow dumped here in Hoonah that year. And I was here for part of it. And I was glad to go back when it was time to go back, because I was cold when I got back. The temperature difference between Iraq and Alaska was about 100 degrees difference. It was about 140 when I left there, and it was 40 degrees here, so I was cold. Well, the main reason why I decided to get out of the Guard is I signed up to be a mechanic so I can use the mechanicking skills when I get back to the civilian life. If they had me doing mechanics while I was in the Guard, I might have stayed in longer. The only time I got wrench time was while I was being trained for it. After I got back to the unit, I got voluntold to be infantry, and that's what I was deployed when I was over in Iraq. I was infantry, but mostly I was a driver. I drive the convoys, drive the Humvees to and from the border. So for that reason, since I didn't get any wrench time while I was in the Guard, I decided it's time to move on. Just messing with our battle buddies while we're over in Iraq. There's enough of us to do shifts in the towers, and in between shifts, we're in a building, and we have 12-hour shifts. Sometimes we end up staying up for 24 hours or more, so we can call family back at home, and we go back to the border patrols, and we have downtime. Sometimes we fall asleep, sitting in a chair just like I am now, fall asleep, and we'd have, like around Thanksgiving time, we'd have Cool Whip, and we put Cool Whip on each other while we're sleeping. Just like in some of the funny videos that you'd see on YouTube or something, you'd put Cool Whip in the hands and tickle their nose and get them to smack themselves in the face with the Cool Whip in their hand. Mess with each other like that. One of the battle buddies was my best man at my wedding. And I didn't know him until I went down to Aberdeen Proving Grounds, Maryland for my advanced training. He signed up to be a mechanic just like I did. So that's where we met, was in Aberdeen Proving Grounds, Maryland. He's actually from Angoon, so we're in Southeast. We travel to Juneau often. He travels to Juneau often. We never met until we went and joined the service. And I first saw him down in Maryland. The only reason why I recognized him was we have a unit patch that our Juneau unit gives us to put on our arm, and it's the Big Dipper on a patch. And one of my battle buddies in my company said, "That guy's got an Alaska patch. Do you know him?" As we were walking by each other, he was kind of standing at attention, looking at his drill sergeant. And I yell out to him as I'm walking by, "Alaska!" And he looks at me and I point at my patch. And ever since then, we've been friends. And he's Aaron McCluskey from Ingoon. So that's one of my battle buddies that I keep in contact with. A few others, thanks to technology and social media. On Facebook, they have Facebook, and so do they, and they check post statuses and pictures that I get to check up on them and ask them how they're doing and what, or give them a fair warning, "Hey, I'm coming over, better have a place for me to crash." It's affected my life with my family that I have now, my wife and 2 kids. My wife now, Frances Williams, that's her maiden name. I first met her in high school, so she's my high school sweetheart. Didn't talk to her about joining the military, and told her that I was traveling, and went up to Anchorage for my recruiter to sign the papers and officially become a National Guard member. I didn't talk to my wife about that at all, and she was not happy. And during that time, after I joined, some things happened between me and my wife. We ended up splitting apart, and for the time period that I was over in Iraq, and when I got back, both of us were still single, so we tried it again, and we got married in 2009. Had a little bit of a conflict, but any relationship has its ups and downs. Anybody that joins the military, like I mentioned earlier, when he asked me why I got out of the National Guard, was because I didn't have any wrench time for my MOS that I signed up for. When you sign up for your MOS, make sure you're going to be doing your MOS when you get back to your unit. It'd be my only other thing that I'd add.